Today on Movie Wallace, we talk about Eleanor the Great, If I Had Legs, I'd Kick You, and Good Fortune. Time for Movie Wallace. Hi, this is Joe.
Hi, it's Rashmi.
And yes, dear as well.
Movie Wallace is your weekly dose of film reviews, movie news, and general banter in theatres, on DVD, online streaming, or in the back of an airplane. If you love the movies, this show is for you. Back to back recordings this Friday night. It's a good way to spend a Friday evening, isn't it?
It is. Sure. It is. Right. Talking about the things we love watching.
No alcohol needed.
It's a gift.
No.
Yes.
No alcohol offered. Hint, hint, yes, Lee.
I have so much alcohol, you have no idea.
Don't boast.
No. What would you like?
No, it's all good. Honestly, if you open a bottle of wine right now,
yes,
I'd drink the whole thing.
Yes, he does make a mean meal.
He does. He's a cocktail master.
Yeah, you do make a good meal, Yasti.
I do make a good meal. I have two open bottles of wine. I have beers.
Maybe the next podcast.
Okay.
But yes, happy Friday again. We are in the process of catching up on a bunch of movies that we've watched, so we're going to be super efficient, which means, unfortunately, no Netflix picks this week, but we will be back soon enough with some recommendations. If you haven't watched the Catherine Bigelow movie from our last podcast, maybe you should do that. That movie was called A House of Dynamite, so that'll keep you busy. So, I guess let's get into our reviews. We are talking about three movies today. Eleanor the Great, If I Had Legs, I'd Kick You, and Good Fortune. Let's tackle them in that order, beginning with Eleanor the Great, which I will introduce. So Eleanor the Great is the directorial debut of Scarlett Johansson. I didn't know that. That's fascinating.
Yeah.
So she's obviously adding skills to her resume. I'm sure she's lived on a film set for long enough to know roughly how to do it. So I'll be intrigued to see how she did. The movie stars the wonderful June Squibb as Eleanor Morgenstein, a 94-year-old woman who, after the death of her best friend, leaves her quiet Florida life to move in with her daughter and grandson in New York City. They're struggling to find purpose and connection. She stumbles into a support group for Holocaust survivors, and in a moment of loneliness begins to tell her friend's story as if it was her own. Movie stars, like I say, June Squibb. We also have supporting turns from Jessica Hecht and Chiwetel Ejiofor. Tell me what you guys thought of Eleanor the Great.
I was going to mime, and then you were going to I love this movie. It's gentle and sweet and meaningful. It's beautifully acted. It says so much about relationships with your family between old and young, where you find solace. It's about grief. It's about making family where there is none. It's about so much. It's about aging, about being relevant. It's just lovely. I love this movie. Yes, D.
Yeah, I like this movie a lot as well. I think it's just absolutely a miracle that insurance companies continue to have June Squibb be like a major actor because she's so old. And I mean,
how old is she actually?
She's 90 something, right?
Oh, the character is 94, but
I think she's in her 90s. But you know, she's not. She can move around and she can do things, and she's a very strange.
She's 95.
She's 95. That's amazing.
And
she's
great.
And she's, she's the lead in this movie.
Yeah.
But we can talk about June Squibb. She's very particular, and I'm very grateful for her. But I think this movie, like Rashmi said, is about many things. But for me, it's ultimately a movie about forgiveness in every sense of the word. It's about forgiveness to your family. It's about forgiveness to yourself. It's about forgiving those who have passed. It's about, you know, just little things we might do and say that might inadvertently really harm other people, and how there is no better solution to that than to seek forgiveness. So I really, it kind of is very gentle. It's it's not banging you on the head with anything. There's no moralizing. I think there's a very workmanlike quality to the whole movie in terms of how it's put together. It's not fussy. Mm-hmm. It just goes from 1 to 2 to 3. And I think that kind of bodes well for Scarlett Johansson as a first-time filmmaker.
Yeah, I'm very impressed with her.
Because, you know, you could get bogged down on getting the perfect shot and, you know, making people cry about this. And it's
using
like
everything
she's like,
in your bag of tricks.
Yeah.
Right. And she's like, just trust the story. This is the story I've been given.
Yeah.
I'm going to trust it and I'm just going to run it through and I'm going to let the story do all the hard work, and it does. So I appreciated it a lot.
Yeah, it's one of those the whole family can enjoy together, right? If you're looking for something, the holidays are coming up soon and you're looking for something to watch, this is a great movie to just put on and watch as a family.
Yeah. Is your description, Rashmi, made it sound very sentimental and weepy.
Mm-mm. No, it's not weepy at all.
Okay.
It's about weepy topics, but it's completely unsentimental about it.
Yeah, it's very unsentimental about it. Okay. In fact.
Yeah, this is
there's comical moments as well, which are very funny.
Yeah, what's the tone? Yeah. So
I mean it's
dramedy.
It's a dramedy. I think the second half is very strong drama. Maybe the first half is a little bit more comical. Yeah. And to be this is not like a Christmas movie, haha movie. It gets into very thorny, kind of dark issues. I mean at the base of it all is, grief.
Yeah.
Which is driving everything in the plot. So it deals with a lot of thorny issues. But I think the way it's handled with a lightness of touch, which I really appreciate. Otherwise, it could have become kind of overbearing and finger wagging, and it's none of those
and
things.
And it could have very easily become a Hallmark movie, but
right, or melodramatic
from that, right?
Yeah.
It kind of is what it is, and it does it so well. And really well acted by, again, June Squibb is amazing in this. There's someone called Erin Kellyman, who kind of plays a friend that becomes friends with June Squibb's character.
She's very good. I've not seen her
really
anywhere.
She's really good. Yeah, she's a British actress.
Oh, she's British.
Yeah, yeah. Okay. And she's very, very good. But it's just one of those lovely character movies. And I love that it's shot around New York. It's kind of a love letter to New York a little bit. It's just lovely.
And, Chiwetel Ejiofor, he's in movie after movie, and I saw him recently. I watched another movie, a Spike Lee movie, long time ago. And, he was there like 20 years ago. He's now still here doing some pretty reliable, hardworking, acting. So it's the equivalent of a Clint Eastwood movie. I think it's really no fuss.
Yeah.
It's like, it seems like it was made quickly in a month without making a big deal about it, without spending a lot of money. And it stands on its own merits.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Sounds like a quick summing up, but it's a good movie.
Yeah. Seven out of 10 for me. I think there is not a thing wrong with it. June Squibb is not Meryl Streep, right? She's not a great actress, but everything she does, she's very believable and she's very grounded. And so she's really good company to spend time with. And, she has a little bit of difficulty. She has to carry some pretty difficult kind of plot twists, and she's really up to it.
Yeah, it's an 8 out of 10 for me. Really enjoyable, sweet movie.
Yeah.
Make you smile.
Yeah.
Love it.
And Hollywood, give some money to Scarlett Johansson to make some other movies.
Yeah, she's a very competent director.
Very competent director, yeah.
Yeah, that sounds it. I'm looking forward to getting a chance to see that.
Yeah.
Okay. Moving along quickly, then, let's talk about If I Had Legs, I'd Kick You.
Okay, so I have the intro to this one. So with her life crashing down around her, Linda attempts to navigate her child's mysterious illness, her absent husband, a missing person, and an increasingly hostile relationship with her therapist. So this is written and directed by Mary Bronstein, and it stars the incredible Rose Byrne, who we all love. Mary Bronstein's actually in this quickly. Delaney Quinn plays a child. A$AP Rocky is here, and Christian Slater, amongst a whole host of others.
We just saw A$AP Rocky in the Spike Lee movie.
Yes. No lesser thing.
No.
Highest to lowest.
Highest to lowest. Yes. And he's here pretty, again.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I wonder if they call him A$AP or Rocky. I always ask that question. Okay. So, Joe, what did you think of If I Had Legs, I'd Kick You? Something you don't often hear from me.
I have to say that I I struggle to interpret this. So, you know, for me, this is one of those movies that makes me feel a little dumb. You know, there's a British comic trope where somebody says, I don't really understand that. And that's kind of how I felt about this. It is it's very engaging and, you know, Miss Byrne should begin kind of, you know, picking out Oscar costumes because I think her performance here was standout. And I love that she's in the lead again. She's, I think you, Yasti, you always bring that up when we see Rose Byrne. It's like, why is she given opportunities to lead a film? Well, you know, she's really on point here. You know, again, I think I should also add it. I was so stressed when I came out of this movie. Like, I mean, my cortisol levels were through the roof. So, you know, I just didn't understand some of its themes. It delves into kind of moments that feel like horror at times. And I know that there's some deep metaphorical points being made that just didn't hit me well enough. So frustrating. It's something I admired, not loved, but I mean, when I say I admired it, I mean, I really admire this movie. It's got a lot of really good things, just not my cup of tea.
Yes, Dee.
So I think I've said this for two other movies before, and I think this movie joins the legion of two other movies which have come out relatively recently. One was the movie Tully with Charlize Theron, which came out, I don't know, 5-6 years ago. And then most recently, last year, we had Night Bitch with Amy Adams. And I think this movie joins the legion of those two movies in making the case that literature and writing and films and arts and pop culture tends to venerate the state of womanhood. Like the best thing that can happen to a woman is that they get a child, which is true, but most of those forget to mention how sometimes having a child can be entirely soul crushing. It can just, you know, suck the last breath out of your body because it's so demanding, especially if you have a difficult child. And I think the purpose of this movie is to kind of, you know, bring again to the fore a mom who is just completely losing it being a mother.
She's overwhelmed
and we don't see that often. I mean, like Tully did that, Nightbitch did that, and this one does it as well. And it's funny you brought up the horror because the movie does go into body horror, but just and as did Nightbitch. But I think that it's all meant to be metaphorical in that, you know, what the mom feels is like actual physical bodily harm. I have a few things to say. I kind of question the ethics of the movie because I'm just going to say this. We'll discuss this more. It seems the whole point of the entire running time of this movie is to stress you out.
Yeah.
Right? That's the whole point of the movie. Okay. I mean, it's
mission
like,
accomplished.
It's like one thing after another. Like I couldn't breathe. My blood pressure was so high. And at one point I got to be like, come on, you cannot, it's kind of almost a cheap shot that you keep throwing horrible adversities on this poor woman, one after the other, like she does not get a break. But having said that, I mean, it's a very independent piece of work. I will champion, you know, Rose Byrne till the day I die. And any movie which gives her an opportunity to be a lead and to shine is good.
Yeah, kind of like the smashing machine in our last podcast. I think this is a wonderful acting vehicle for Rose Byrne. I mean, she shines. And like we've been saying for years and years and years, when is her day going to come? And I agree with you both. This is when the day comes. Yes, you stole my notes around Tully and Night Bitch. Mm-hmm. I think they did it a little bit better,
yeah,
if I'm honest.
Yeah, more humor even, yeah.
Yeah, this one has humor, but it's I don't know. I get that whole point about it's about a mother being overwhelmed, but then it has this really strong narrative about a child with an eating disorder. Mm-hmm. And I didn't feel like it did that part a lot of justice, but it was such a main component of the movie.
Well, was it?
Well, because maybe that was the MacGuffin, right? Maybe that was the
Because I was going to say, and there's a deliberate choice in this
movie. Yeah, and they didn't even show the child.
Made to not make it about that from a visual perspective. I mean,
right.
We know the mother's, you know, it's obviously done to give us a mother's viewpoint, but I mean, it's also done in a way that, I mean, we never get to really see the world other than through Rose Byrne's eyes.
Right. Yeah. I mean, so that I found a little uneasy, the fact that we don't see the child. And I understand I understand why it's being done for that point, Joe, that they're showing the world through Rose Byrne's eyes. But then it becomes a gimmick. And then I couldn't get away from that. Like, that's what I was looking for, as opposed to being in the moment. So it took me out of the moment. But again, I think this is a great acting vehicle for Rose Byrne. I mean, and again, I would say that I think Night Bitch and Tully do it a little bit better. That's not to say this isn't a bad movie, but it's just too much. It's a little overcooked in my mind. And I wasn't sure about the end. I didn't quite understand the end of it.
Yeah. My key struggle here, I think, is there's a lot of interesting imagery.
Yeah.
But I can't, and I think it's by design that I can't distinguish the reality from the metaphor.
Mm-hmm.
And so, in a way, it feels very schizophrenic, because again, there's this like little subplot then about this patient that goes and does something.
Yeah.
You know,
oh yeah, she's a therapist herself, right?
Right. She is a therapist, and she has a patient who then goes and, you know, creates this whole like sub, you know, plot. And so, you know, but the some of the imagery, you know, is, you know, goes into horror territory. But I couldn't parse out what was imagined and what was real. And so, again, I think that's purely by design, but that kind of thing, as a very simple movie viewer, can frustrate me if I can't penetrate what they're getting at. And I think, you know, that's where I had a hard time. And again, I need to temper my comments with, I didn't hate this at all, but I'm frustrated by it in a way that, you know, maybe the two of you don't sound like you are.
I mean, I think the whole thing about, So by the way, Mary Bronstein, who wrote and directed it, also plays the doctor in the clinic, who is trying to convince her that unless her daughter starts eating, this very, very dangerous procedure will need to be done, which might kill her daughter. So the whole, I think she's generating conflict where how, if you're a mom, how do you deal with a child who refuses to eat, but by her losing weight, that's bringing her closer to mortal danger, right? So it creates a very stressful environment. Like, if you were the mother of a child who is not eating, but she needs to eat, like, what do you do? Do you force her? All this stuff, it kind of brings up all these issues. I also agree that the whole side plot was kind of interesting. And we should also mention that Conan O'Brien is here. You know, as a co-worker, who's also a therapist in who's her therapist and also a functioning therapist in the same office. So there's a lot going on. And I was very surprised with Conan O'Brien. He seems like a good presence.
Yeah.
I mean, I liked him here. I would also like to, in case our listeners are puzzled about this, I want to be very clear. This is not for the squeamish. Okay. So this movie, the body horror part at one point gets very intense. And that was the part where I was wondering, like, is she really doing this or is this in her head? I have an interpretation. I think she really did it. And I have an interpretation that the ending was more positive. But you could read it in any number of ways, because the movie has gotten so intense by that point that you don't know if it's reality or imagined.
Yeah. I mean, I think that's what made me ultimately very uncomfortable with the movie, because it crosses over into actual harm.
Mm-hmm.
And again, we don't know whether it's real or imagined, but you know, when you cross that line, a character for whom you sympathize is, you know, deliberately given a different like slant, and so I became very uncomfortable then, and like, what am I watching here? Like, why? And again, the director is effectively, you know, pushing my buttons and making me feel stuff, which is exactly what I think the intention was. But that left me a little lost. I guess that's my kind of summary here.
Yeah,
right?
Score.
I mean, I struggled to like this movie, but I do admire it. I'm going to give it a generous 7. You know, it sounds like I liked it more than I did, and I didn't love the movie, but I mean, I admire what it's doing, and I think it's a necessary watch. I think it's a worthwhile watch for people who can stomach it.
Yeah. No pun intended.
Yeah, no pun intended.
Yes, Steve.
It's a great title. If I had legs, I'd kick you, but I have no idea how that applies in any way with what's going on the screen. Yeah. I mean, it's very memorable.
Something she says in a conversation at one point. Yeah.
Okay. Okay. Listen, some movies are like a fun thing you watch, right? When you're stressed and you just want to unwind. There are some movies which are great, like mythic stuff, and you get excited. There are movies which are thrillers. And then there are some movies which just put you through the ringer. This is that movie. This movie puts you through the ringer. It seems to be genetically designed specifically to stress you out from the first minute to the end. So if you want a very kind of visceral, kind of heart-racing, stressful immersion kind of experience in a movie, then and you know, maybe you're too jaded with all the frivolous stuff you see otherwise, then I think this movie is for it. I will be putting Rose Byrne's name in for, you know, best lead actress in a movie for sure, because she's so committed with this through the observed part, through the unthinkable parts, through all of the parts. She's so game. And you know, she's that her character is never in the slightest way meant to be sympathetic. Like, she does horrible things all the time, and yet we are kind of with her, and that's, you know, I commend her for that. So because it's so unusual in its physiognomy, it's so kind of atypical of anything else we see, and because it kind of, like Tully and like Night Witch, is making the case that, you know, motherhood can be really, really traumatic, especially if you're a single parent. I'm giving it an 8 out of 10, but it's not for everyone. I think if you want a different experience, watch it. If you're squeamish, don't watch it.
Yeah, I'm giving Rose Byrne's performance a 10 out of 10. I think the movie for me overall, like Joe, is a 7 out of 10. It lacked something, and I feel awful that I can't articulate what's missing from it. It's interesting. It's interesting, and it's intriguing, and it's good filmmaking, but something's missing and I can't articulate, can't put my finger on what that is. It was missing something. I don't know whether it's the end or how it ties up or the fact that she doesn't fight back or the fact that she just...
I think the ambiguity is what...
Yeah,
what
yeah. And I'm usually okay with ambiguity, but
Not me.
Yeah. Yeah. So 7 out of 10. So same score as Joe's. And I did enjoy watching it. It's not for everyone.
Yeah, I mean, I hope this writer-director makes other movies, but I want her to kind of tone it in a little bit, because you know, the movie really upset me because it uses the sounds of her daughter screaming again and again and again to kind of like a cheap shot to stress you out, because I got sick of just listening to her daughter screaming at the top of her lungs, and it was very unsettling for me, and it felt like a cheap shot, right? If you've used it once or twice or three times in your movie, it's effective. But then if your daughter, if that a screaming child is screaming all the time, then it just becomes like, don't you have anything else to say? But maybe that is the point.
That's a choice. It's to convey how overwhelmed that is. We've been in the presence of family members with young children, and you know, there are times when, you know, there is no off switch, right? Mm-hmm. And we're fortunate, we get to dip in and out, and I can understand the plight if a parent of a child with this sickness being completely unsupported by her husband. And yeah, so I think that that was a directorial choice to put us in her shoes. But
I was looking up Mary Bronstein. I mean, she's directed a movie back in the day called Yeast, which had Greta Gerwig and the Safdie brothers in it.
Wow.
Never heard of that movie and never seen it. So interesting. So this is only her second feature that she's directing. So interesting. Okay.
All right.
That's the end.
Let's move along then.
One more. Yeah. It's like, that's the end.
One more movie.
Not yet.
We've done all our homework. No, we haven't. We've got one more movie to review in this, and then we'll be coming up with another podcast very soon. So let's quickly jump then to Good Fortune. Yes.
I'll introduce it.
You'll tell us.
So Aziz Ansari, who, by the way, we are going to be seeing live.
We're seeing him on Sunday.
In just a couple of days, we are going to be seeing him live do a stand-up performance. But Aziz Ansari is a South Asian, Indian continent-based stand-up comedian who rose to fame first by being in Parks and Recreation several seasons. I think that's when he came into prominence. And then I think his most lauded effort to date has been that he was the writer and director of Master of None,
which I love. For
at least the first two seasons were amazing. And he was the lead actor in it on HBO. And he has made a lot of shorts, but he makes his first feature length writing and directorial debut with the movie Good Fortune. And the movie Good Fortune has the good fortune of having an amazing cast. Just listen to the cast in this movie. Keanu Reeves is in this film. Aziz Ansari is, of course, here. Seth Rogen is here. Kiki Palmer is here. Sandra Oh is here. It's almost an embarrassment of riches. So Ansari has written and directed it. The one sentence IMDb synopsis of the movie is that a well-meaning but rather inept angel named Gabriel meddles in the lives of a struggling gig worker and a wealthy venture capitalist. The struggling gig worker is played by Ansari, and then the wealthy venture capitalist is played by Rogan. So what did you guys think of Good Fortune? Good Fortune is in theaters right now as we speak.
I love Aziz Ansari, so I'll start the review with that. I thought this was sweet, and it's fun, and it left me with a smile on my face, but it felt too derivative of Trading Places in my mind. Mm. It's fun in the moment, but it doesn't feel very memorable. And there seemed to be some chemistry missing. It's odd having a Seth Rogen and an Aziz Ansari because their styles seem so contradictory to each other. And I didn't quite think the chemistry really played out, but it was lovely to see Keanu Reeves here. And I like the idea behind it, but again, too derivative of Trading Places. And in fact, I thought there was actually a homage to it because they used some of the music from one of the main scenes in Trading Places in the movie. Yeah. Enjoyable, but not memorable.
Is Aziz Ansari South Asian? I mean, he feels very New York to me. this movie is working really hard. It feels like a slightly less accomplished version of the Master of None series. Aziz Ansari's comedy and humor has such a genuine sweetness through it. Like the character. So it is very derivative of Trading Places. I saw a comment here on the Rotten Tomatoes, which talks about It's a Wonderful Life. And I wasn't sure if you'd caught this one yet because you weren't at the same screening as us. So it has those kind of themes to it, but it works hard to entertain and it has as heart to spare. And I forgave it all its foibles because at the end of the day, I came out really enjoying and smiling it in spite of itself. Yeah. And I think all the things you said, Rashmi, they're absolutely spot on observations. I think the Seth Rogen, Aziz Ansari doesn't quite work. It's clunky dialogue in places. It's got this very, it's got a very 20-something, almost teenage view of capitalism and the world, and you know, wealth is evil, and you know, we need to give more to the poor people.
That's rough.
No, but it does. I mean, you know, this is coming really from the heart of the, you know, the imbalances in the world are evil, and we have to fix them by, you know, spreading the love and the wealth and the. So look, I've rambled, but I really genuinely found love for this movie. Mm. It made me smile. I found it very funny at times.
Yeah.
I just would say, go watch like a couple seasons of Master of None. That's him at his pinnacle. This is him working on something that didn't quite deliver the same greatness, because Master of None is greatness
is
for me.
It's greatness. Yeah. Yeah. I agree. Yeah.
So I like this a lot more than both of you, for sure.
No, I love it.
Okay. I think there is a very kind of low-brow, low-stakes kind of approach to the whole movie. Everything feels like a fluff and a frill, and there are no
almost
really...
improvised.
Angel
maybe
wings,
improvised.
Like.
Yeah, everything feels like... it feels like this is the kind of movie where nobody's going to die, nobody's going to, you know... It feels very low-stakes, and I kind of... Initially, I felt like, is it just a sign of... you know, them not working hard. But I think actually this is a hardworking movie.
Yeah.
I mean, it's definitely paying homage to It's a Wonderful Life. But I kind of like, you know, there's a one of the best dialogues in the movie is where Keanu Reeves is the guardian angel. And, you know, he has his own manager played by Sandra Oh. And Sandra Oh tells him, like, how come you've gotten in this mess? And he said, I wanted to show this man that having having money is not going to...
one of the trailers,
is not going to solve all your problems. But then he got the money and it solved all of his problems. So you know, I kind of like that. I see what you mean, that there's a different sensibility to Aziz Ansari and Seth Rogen, but I think we're living in Seth Rogen's kind of a good time for him. Like, he's been on Platonic, he's been on The Studio, and he's doing this, and, you know, Rogen is always Rogen.
Yeah.
Right? He has zero versatility.
Right.
But for what he does, he's pretty good. I also liked, it was very odd for him to pick Kiki Palmer as his love interest.
Yes.
But, you know,
I love that.
But Kiki Palmer is, again, one of those actors who anytime she's on a screen, even in a bad movie, I'm just happy to see her.
Yeah, no, she elevated those scenes.
Elevated it. And then, like you said, weirdly, the movie has some, towards the end, has some very strong views about being pro-unions, which I didn't see on the tarot card for this movie. I'm like, really? This movie's going to get into unions, whether unions are good or bad? But like you, I laughed, I smiled. I think Keanu Reeves is so particular. I think if this was the first movie I had ever seen of Keanu Reeves, I'd be like, this is a terrible actor. Why is he in this movie?
Right.
But we know Keanu Reeves from decades, and he's perfect for this role in his dry, droll kind of delivery of lines and his, you know, and there's a running joke about how everybody finds him so attractive, which I kind of found funny.
Yeah.
So I think there's a lot going for the movie. I kind of was smiling the whole time. I laughed a little bit, and it's a piffle, but it was a fun piffle.
Yeah, I think it's one of those perfect Friday night decompress movies, right? But I feel like I couldn't hang on to the message. That there's no clear message. There's all the social, political commentary about rich and poor and progression and automation and, you know, millennials and gender and age. There's all of that stuff in here. But I didn't quite get the... And I think you just said it. The central conceit of the movie is that the angel says, I gave him money in the hope that... he would realize that money doesn't solve all your problems. Money does solve your problems. But there's nothing else. There is something else to it. There is a little bit else. But the else isn't big enough to hang on to.
Yeah.
To give a fair moral of the story, right? There's no moral here. And it feels like a fairy tale that needs a moral to be wrapped up in. Like a
but
bow
I think
on
it's
it.
Just trying to be funny.
It is, and it is funny. But what I'm saying is that it's told like a fairy tale, right? It's a fairy tale.
It's like pretending to be a fable.
Yeah, it's pretending to be a fable. And so at the end of every fable, you need a lesson, and there is no lesson.
There is an epilogue which is tacked on rather clumsily at the end of the movie, which is what happens like a few years later. And I think that epilogue, so I think if that wasn't there...
I'll have to rewatch that bit.
Yeah, if that wasn't there, I would agree with you that... It kind of is like, is it saying it's good to have wealth after all, or is it not? But I think that epilogue very conclusively says that we all complain that our life sucks, and that if I only switch my life with George Clooney or with, you know, whoever, with Julia Roberts, it'd be so much better. But surprise, it turns out that, you know, your own life is wonderful, and that's the life you're meant to have, and you will never be happy living Julia Roberts' life. I think that was my takeaway, which is a very obvious kind of thing. You would have expected a little bit more insight, a little bit more depth to it.
Yeah.
I agree. Yeah.
Especially because that's what it's trying to sell you. And so I think it's just shy. If that had been very punctuated, this would be an amazing movie. But again, I'm now doing a joke where it sounds like I hated the movie and I didn't. Mm-hmm. I think it's good enough. And I would give this, I'd give this about a 6 out of 10.
Oh.
Yeah.
Oh, that's true.
Yeah.
That's...
I mean, it left me smiling.
Okay.
But, you know, I'm the Aziz lover in the group.
Maybe, maybe you're not, because my score is going to be substantially higher than that.
Mine too.
Go on then.
9.
No, I mean, to me, this is like a squidgy donut of a thing, right?
Yeah.
Like it's absolutely, it's not empty calories. It's like very satisfying.
Didn't get the satisfying.
Enjoyable, indulgent calories. You can't have it too often, but I mean, it's just.
As we found out this week.
We did have donuts this week, our annual donut run.
Our annual donut run.
We only allow ourselves donuts on
once a year.
Maybe twice at most. But it's like, I love donuts. But for all its kind of foibles, it's effective. And I was beaming when I came out. And when I spoke with the press rep at the end, he said something, there's a lot of things that you can knock if you choose to be snooty about this movie, but
are you calling me snooty?
I'm not calling you snooty, but I'm inferring it. But at the end of the day, the movie does its job of being funny, and it does it with big heart. And you know what more can we ask for? 8 out of 10.
Okay, Yasti.
Yeah, it's an 8 out of 10 for me as well, which is a little generous, but. Yeah. This is absolutely the back of the plane movie. This is absolutely the movie if you've had a bad day at work. You've had a bad day at work. You hate your work colleagues. You need something to de-stress. Go watch this in the theater. Watch it on a Friday evening. Watch it on a Saturday evening. It has its heart in the right place. Maybe, like you said, it's a little superficial in its view of the world. But, you know, I like what it has to say. I'm smiling even as I'm saying it right now. You know, Keanu Reeves could just coast on his, Matrix and John Wick movies.
Yeah.
And I love that he trusts Aziz Ansari enough to be in this kind of lighthearted role. And he kind of, I'm really there for him. I'm there for Kiki Palmer. And I think it's like a hug, right? It's a hug. It's maybe a hug from a donut. Yeah. So I really like it. It has its heart in the right place. 8 out of 10.
Okay. Good.
Yeah.
Good. All right. Well, once again, thank you for listening. If you've made it this far, we appreciate you. You know we do. Please like and subscribe if you're watching us on YouTube. It really helps us gain some traction. I see it. Our numbers are a little better than they have been. So getting especially after the podcast drops. I see a big surge of people who watch as soon as the podcast drops. So I get much more data from YouTube. I wish we had more numbers on our actual audio. As well, but nonetheless, thank you for listening. Thank you for being with us. Thank you. I hope you enjoyed these reviews. Coming up, we have reviews of Frankenstein, Springsteen, Deliver Me From Nowhere, and Blue Moon. They will be in a podcast coming up to you very soon.
He was going to listen to a podcast as we are ending the last one.
I was trying to see the audience score on our last podcast, but carry on, yes.
Until our next podcast. Too many movies, too little time, mate. Goodbye from me.
And me.
And me as well.